The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
I'm Tony Curry. He's Michael Coleman. The show's called Mission Minded. Keep your mind, your mission, your mind. Of course, Michael, formerly the Jimmy Hill Mission, now with the Montgomery Area Food Bank. He's been the CEO down there. You been down there a year yet?
End of this month. Just a couple more weeks. Yeah.
All right. Well, I know you have a way to go. And by the way, make sure you download the TKR app. Do that through Apple or Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K, K U R R E, through Android. You can listen to the show at least 5 days a week. And if you miss any of the shows, you want to go back and listen to any of the shows, and we do all kinds of great topical stuff, you can check out the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. And those, of course, are available wherever you get your podcasts. We're available in every major industry. So listen, I know you want to get into some bus riders, and we'll explain here in a second. But tell me, are you, as the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, and again, you cover 35 counties in the state, you help with Feeding America, you are a big part of the wonderment of non-for-profits here in the great state of Alabama, you have been your entire life, but are you where you thought you'd be in a year? And when you got the Montgomery Area Food Bank, did you have a vision of where you wanted to be in a year?
Well, I'll be completely honest with you. The answer to that question is no. When I first came, I was transitioning, of course, you know, from Birmingham to Jimmy Hill Mission. Lots of times helping the same people who have barriers to progress. And when I first came in here, my very first day, I went home a little concerned. I thought, I didn't connect. But then the second day, it was amazing how I just turned around and my heart caught on fire for what we're doing. And I really just kind of began to assess what my skill set was and what I needed to do to assess the organization, be able to determine, were we in good shape moving forward? Do we need to make some adjustments? And the reality was, the first year you really are learning just about the processes of what you do and how you serve and how you fit in a bigger picture. So I know nonprofits very well. I know organizational management, given my time in the Army for 21 years, but wasn't overly familiar with food banking and with the great network of Feeding America. So I've spent that year learning how all that fits together while also molding and shaping our vision for how we can maximize what we're doing here, not just in battling food insecurity and hunger, but also in touching on some economic mobility opportunities and lifting people out of poverty to a more sustainable existence in our society.
There you go. And that's a wonderful thing. And I mean, yes, as you go, and I know the time flies by very, very quickly for all of us, but I can only imagine you're probably looking at your calendar going, I can't believe it's already been a year here. How far out do you look? And I know we've had shows about this too, having visions for particular businesses, and some people have a one-year model, a three-year model, a five-year model. When you've been with an organization since, 1986? This is how long Montgomery Food Bank's been out there?
Right. It started in 86, and I'm the third executive director, our third CEO. This existed within the organization,
which is really pretty crazy when you're talking over a 37-year length. They only have three CEOs, and that says a lot.
Sure.
about the Montgomery Food Bank. How far in advance do you look? How far in advance do you look? And I guess when you're talking about pressing needs on a day by day basis, it's kind of difficult to do that, isn't it?
Well, I tell you, a lot of it really, to me, depends on the kind of leader you are. So, the way I operate is I am very reactionary in terms of when I see something not working, we attack it and we change and we don't spend too long going down a road that we already know is not working and not effective. So we really try to stay as fluid as possible. So therefore, it doesn't do me any good to map plans out for 3 to 5 years because there's so many variables in that it really changes. And what I found is you can spend a lot of time. And as you do a strategic plan out and you get years 3, 4, 5, it gets more and more vague because it's just hard to really flesh those ideas out. It's just a general direction. But I tell you, I kind of like to just take it year to year and really have a good perspective, always looking out. Like when I operate, it's not just my job to look at what's happening and look at what's happening in 3 months, but to look how we're operating and seeing ourselves 6 months to a year out. So always keeping a frontal view. So if there's an event coming up, I'm looking at not only the event, but I'm looking at past the event and past that event and trying to anticipate what's going to be needed after these things happen.
There you go. He's Michael Coleman, CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank, MAFB.org. If you'd like to help them out, great website. They do wonderful work here in the great state of Alabama. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. We do read all of our emails, so keep those coming, and we'll send it in. You wanted to get into, though, something kind of interesting about bus riders, and that is focusing on getting the right people on the bus, but also getting the wrong people off the bus. Tell me why you came up with this idea.
Yeah, it was, I just came across something. It wasn't an article. It was actually just a meme that I saw, I think, on LinkedIn or Facebook. And I thought to myself, this is so true. Because I have been in the military, it's a little bit more difficult in the military because people are assigned to your unit and sometimes you don't really have the flexibility to move them in and out of your unit, and you have to find what's their best utilization of that person. But when you go into an organization, you have to understand, you know, what's your vision, how you like to operate. And they always talk about, you know, every new leader wants to come in and bring in their people. And that's not really my perspective. I think when I come in, the idea is I want to see what we have. And so I've got to give them an understanding clearly of how I'm going to be evaluating them in order to determine, because I have to determine the employees that are there. I have to determine, are they a right fit? Is it something to where I'm just moving them within the organization to put them in a better opportunity to succeed and kind of be more productive for the company? Or is it somebody whose value system and whose idea of success and all that just doesn't match with mine? And so those are the people that once that's determined, then you got to figure out that process of how to get them off the bus, because you can put a lot of people on the bus, but if you're bringing them into situations that are, I won't even say toxic, but people who don't share the same values, don't share the same excitement, don't share the same purpose, they're not driven by your mission in the nonprofit world, oh, they can just do irreparable harm to your culture and overall to your productivity.
All right, so there's about a million different ways I can go here, and we've talked about the toxicity of the workplace. I know a lot of people would look at it, and again, it really depends on your type of business, right? If you're just talking about manual labor, whether you're talking about forklift drivers or anything else, are you getting the boxes in this particular corner in a period of time that we need to have done, as opposed to more creative types and people that need to come up with different ideas to expand your brand, your business? But you talked about personalities. And I've seen this firsthand with you, where you'll go in and you're giving everyone a shot. You don't want to fire anyone. You want to allow people to burn out on their own and basically want to get out on their own, correct?
Yeah, because, you know, one of the things I want to communicate as part of the culture is that every employee has value. And of course, I'm going to work closer with some employees than others. I'm going to have close relationships just because our personalities may jive, and it may be easier to have an ongoing relationship with an employee that's easy to talk to. But I want to make sure that every employee knows that they have value, and I understand they have their own situations. In other words, I don't come in and just look at how many boxes are prepared and just say, okay, well, you're not getting enough of these boxes prepared, because I have to think about, wait a minute, this person has a family. This person is trying to recover out of it. I mean, there's just so many variables in their life. And if I truly care about that person, I want to do all that I can to help them be successful. And I'm even willing to slow down progress in a particular area in order to devote my time and attention to an individual to help boost them up, whether that be additional training, whether it be some time with the family to work through the issues, some outside expertise coming in and helping guide and coach them, whatever their needs are. I really would like to do that and get them up to speed. But inevitably, you have to sit down with people, make some tough decisions. And when you do that, you're also opening up your company to potential liability. So you really have to make sure that you do that the right way, because you could end up creating situations that end up following you for certainly months, but perhaps years to come.
Well, and we'll get into, he's Michael Coleman, by the way, the CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank. I'm Tony Curry. This is Mission Minded. You're here 5 days a week here on the TKR app and wherever you get your favorite podcast. We're on every major industry. You're not only talking about getting people on the bus, but you're also talking about getting people in the right seats on the bus, which I think is really interesting. We'll talk about that in a second. I've always think it's interesting, and I've seen this in certainly my business as well, where we had some salespeople that just knocked it out of the park every single month when it came to numbers, but they were snaky in the way they did it. They would cut some throats, and they would go as far as to cut some throats in their own house just to get their numbers. Sure. I've seen people steal businesses left and right all the time. Then you throw in some agencies, and you got people that have great relationships with agencies, and maybe they're poaching business from their own people inside their own. So it's not all about just the numbers, and I like the fact it's not how many boxes you can stack, it's how you're doing it. But how do you differentiate if you got a person who's nailing it? And we've even had, Michael, we even had some people where we were $50,000-$60,000 short, like the last week of a quarter. And there was always a couple of guys where you're like, guys, we need $50,000, and they'd find it. They'd go, and I don't know how they did it, but they'd find it. How do you deal with those types of personalities?
Well, when you, as a leader, so if you look at it and say, okay, here's their value, they can be that person to go to in crunch time. And like you said, go find $50,000 in sales. And then you have to look at though, what damage do they leave in their wake as they go through that process, not just at the end of the year, but through the entire year. So do they create mistrust? Do they create resentment and envy and hatred and all of those other kind of things? And then you as a leader have to make that decision. Is the $60,000, are you willing to sacrifice these other things for those dollars? And where I've learned is it's so tempting to say, look, we'll make do, we'll fix all this, but we got to have this money. You get so focused on the sales, or you get so focused on the fundraising, or whatever it is, whatever their gift is, or whatever they're bringing to the table, that we begin to feel like that the organization almost can't make it without them. And so what ends up happening is you compromise what you already know in your mind is in the best interest of the company. You compromise the culture that you're working so hard to instill, and you allow other people to work by a different set of standards. Now, I know you're a big sports guy. You know, I love sports. Mm-hmm. Nothing. You see this all the time with special players or players getting special treatment. They're allowed to come late to meetings. They don't fly. I saw this thing with Tom Brady flew home on a different, didn't fly home on a team jet. And even though you don't get bigger superstar than Tom Brady, but when he would do something like that, regardless of the reason, every player on the team starts talking about, oh, he's different. He's special. He's allowed special rules that I'm not. And it just undercuts everything you're trying to do in terms of cohesion. But some people may ultimately make the decision. A business owner or a manager may ultimately say, well, I can't do without it. My choice is I would rather go through the pain of doing it right, even though there may be some short-term pain to that, because you're going to establish more trust and long-term cohesion within the organization.
He is Michael Coleman, CEO of the Montgomery Food Bank. And then you could be like a Michael Jordan who comes to the Birmingham Barons, and people are thinking he's going to get preferential treatment because this guy's not used to taking buses, and he just buys a brand new bus for the baseball team.
That's right.
Well, I mean, and it worked, right? I mean, they're like, it's Michael Jordan, for God's sakes. And of course, most of the guys love to have Michael Jordan in the clubhouse. But you knew he was going to get preferential treatment. He's a millionaire. He had won 6 basketball championships, and he's like, you know what? I'll just buy a brand new bus so we can all enjoy in the riches of me being part of the Birmingham Barons. I found an excerpt while we were doing the show, and actually before a little bit, and I don't know if you've read this book or seen this book called Good to Great, and it's really good. It just talks about how executives ignite the transformations from good to great in their teammates, and talks about 3 different areas that they really need to look at. And it says here, the good to great leaders understood 3 simple truths. First, if you begin with who rather than what. Second, if you have the right people on the bus, the problem of how to motivate and manage people largely goes away. And thirdly, if you have the wrong people, it doesn't matter whether you discover the right direction, you still won't have a great company. Can you kind of pick that apart a little bit for me?
Yeah. So, you know, when I sit down with people, when I come, especially I'm talking about upper level, director level hires, they're the ones that are going to have the most influence. And so, you know, I learned this going all the way back to the military, that the military was, look, the good commanders, the good leaders would allow you a voice behind closed doors. But if your boss said, this is what we're doing, you dare not go out there and undermine that boss and say, well, look, I think this is stupid. I tried to talk them out of it, but this is what we're doing. You know, it was you went out there with one voice and said, the decision has been made. This is what we're doing. And this is how we're going to go out and kill it. We're going to do great. Now, so when I'm talking with people, it's much less about how much acumen they necessarily bring in a particular area. But I want people who are not afraid to be that person to express their own opinion, to have their own thoughts, but also understand the expectation that unity is so important. So getting people on the right bus and getting people that understand that we're going to move very fast, there's going to be a high expectation, not one of perfection, but high expectation. But we're going to pour a lot into you, and we're going to care for you and develop you and give you the necessary resources to be successful. But it's going to be a challenge. And when you get people who embrace that, then it's like, hey, no matter, in my eyes, it's like no matter what comes up, we'll be able to get through it because I'm surrounding myself with culture people, people who care about their employees, and people who can respond in the right way when something negative comes about.
The third part of that, if you have the wrong people, it doesn't matter whether you discover the right direction, you still won't have a great company. Have you ever been in a position like that? I mean, and I would think that, yeah.
You're like, have I been in that position?
I mean, it's easy to come into an organization that's been around for 37 years, in your particular case, 36, that obviously serves a need and is doing a pretty good job. And obviously, there's a lot of different reasons why you would come into that position, whether the former guy's resigning, maybe he's getting fired, whatever it is. But I could see and there's good cleanup guys too. We talked about hatchet guys just come in and say, listen, we need to trim it off the bone here and start all over again with what we've got in house. And I know that's got to be very, very difficult, but can you talk about the differences between coming into a situation where you see a lot of cleanup, there's a lot of weeding out, and then maybe a situation where, you know, maybe I don't need to do too much here, or at least let it run by itself for a little bit to find out where I can make advantageous moves.
Yeah. So let's say I were to come into, let's just take a generic organization, and I were to come into that organization and I begin to evaluate the employees. And let's say I already found somebody that if this person were on the outside, their character, their desires, what they're about, this could be somebody I want inside my organization, but the problem is it could have been their previous vision that they were following, or maybe they just were not allowed to express themselves. And so And talking with them, though, and you say, I'm going to put you in this right situation, then you just see them absolutely blossom. So that happens. And when it does, there's nothing more satisfying just to see somebody come alive, putting them in the right situations. But more so than not, you're going to come into an organization, regardless of what your leadership style is, you're going to find people who are unmotivated, who are not, who just don't get it, who are in maybe the nonprofit space for all the wrong reasons, are not, I'm not saying loyal to me as a person, but loyal in the sense of, hey, every day I'm coming in to serve those with need, and I owe it to them to do everything I can. And when that happens, you just have some tough decisions to make, because those people too have families, and those two, and lots of times people have been with the organization a long time, and in the past administration, maybe that person did it for 15 years and that person was successful. But I'll give you two examples of what I've experienced in the past. Two people, neither one a great fit for the job. Great person, but just wasn't getting the job. So I didn't remove that person. I removed that person out of that position, but put them in another position within the organization that I thought would make them successful. However, the other person that I was moving around, I'm like, no matter where they are, they're not going to be successful. And then I had to begin to think in terms of what's the off ramp for this person so that I can empower them to go work somewhere else and make an impact with another organization.
Kind of like having the boss's son work for you, right? You have to find a spot. It just doesn't seem to be working out. He's Michael Coleman. There was one more excerpt, and allow me to read this, because I just think it's really interesting. And I highlighted this before we actually started the show, because it's unlike anything I ever heard of when you're at least starting a business. The executives who ignited the transformations from good to great did not first figure out where to drive the bus and then get people to take it there. No, they first got the right people on the bus and the wrong people off the bus and then figured out where to drive it. They said, in essence, look, I don't really know where we should take this bus, but I know this much. If we get the right people on the bus, the right people in the right seats, and the wrong people off the bus, then we'll figure out how to take it someplace great. Can you explain that? Because from a business standpoint, I would think it'd be just the other way around. If you've got a good idea and you've got a need, you would think that regardless, it's going to be successful, even if the people aren't that good. But it's really just the opposite, isn't it?
Yeah. So when I came into the food banking, I didn't know that much about food. You know, I had some understanding, but very limited as to where exactly we should go as a food bank and what was even possible as a food bank. So I couldn't lead with a vision other than a generic culture vision. Like, this is how we're going to do business. We're going to care. We're going to empower. We're not going to micromanage. We're going to do all this. But in terms of having a clear vision as to where we wanted to go and all that was possible within food banking, I knew that was going to take months and months and months for me to figure out as I learned more about what that business was. But I already knew who I wanted to surround myself with, because having the wrong people on the bus is like having like your brakes locking up on you. I mean, it's just where you're just dragging tires. I mean, it is like that. So regardless of where we were going, I knew the kind of people I wanted surrounding me. And you can already begin to evaluate that before you ever fully figure out what your direction is going to be. And it's so difficult. So many people don't want to do it. You've got to sit down and you've got to have, you know, let's say I identify somebody that I feel like is not somebody I want on the bus. Well, I have to first take the time to make sure and talk with that person to see, well, am I misjudging that person? Because, you know, it could be a first impression, and I don't want to judge somebody on a first impression. And I have had people change my mind that I've misjudged, you know, prematurely. But I also want to make sure once I do that is I've got to give them, go through that process to give them, I can't just come in and say, hey, I really don't like what you're doing. It's time for you to go. That's where you can, even in a right to work state like Alabama, you can really create hard feelings, create bad press, and also bring about potential legal issues. So you've got to come in and give somebody a chance to turn it around. But if you don't, you also have to have the courage to look them in the eye and say, you know, our professional relationship, it's just time for it to come to an end.
He is Michael Coleman, CEO of the Montgomery Area Food Bank, MAFB.org. We're going to be doing a brand new show coming up this summer. We're looking forward to specifically talk about the needs of the wonderful work they do down there. And of course, you can hear the show on TKR at least 5 days a week and also on the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. Make sure you download the TKR app and search Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We do have time for one email, and I find one that kind of goes along with what we're talking about today. So I'm going to try to jam it in here. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Billy Joe in Sand Mountain. And we've gotten a lot of these questions, and I don't think people realize, and Billy Joe wants to know, how do boards work? The number of board members you need, can you put anyone you want on a board? How do you pick good board members? If someone wants to be on a board, should they be on a board? And you've talked about this a lot, and I think it's very, very interesting because And once you do have a person who's on a board, can you get rid of a board member if it's not working out, much like you do with a staff that you'd have maybe at a Starbucks? Someone's not doing their job, and they're not really part of the board. They're not doing a lot of work. They're not showing up. How do you get rid of board members? Can you kind of briefly go over how all that works?
We could do a whole nother show very easily, probably two or three shows on that, on different aspects of a board. I will tell you in a nutshell, starting a board, legally, you have to have at least three people on a board when you start a 501c3. But I've always thought it's a good idea that you have at least five. And sometimes, you know, like your board can get up as many as 30, 40 people, and then it just becomes almost unmanageable because you want to give your board an opportunity to use their expertise to help you, to advise you in areas that maybe aren't your strength. And it's tough to keep, you know, 25, 30 board members engaged in your work and passionate because part of what you would have to do as a leader is you're the go-between. You're trying to get board members who may not know much about what your business is, but they are, my rule kind of is I want people of influence or affluence. I want people to be able to support with a big check or open me up to an opportunity and introduce me to people in their world that can support. So it's a huge financial support is what boards ideally are supposed to be able to do. But also open up the door to you, not just to people who can write a big check, but people who have expertise and specialties in certain fields that can help you navigate and help you better accomplish your mission. Every board that you get on should have its own layout, its own bylaws, exactly what the board can do, exactly like things like when it's time to nominate new board members, that'll all be laid out in your bylaws.
And who creates his bylaws?
Yeah, so that's done at the very beginning. When you create an organization, you create bylaws.
Okay.
You'll have articles of incorporation, which is just your legal entity, and then you have your bylaws, and your bylaws will lay everything out, like how the board comes to decisions, what the board officers are going to be, what their terms are, what the role of the executive director or the CEO will be, or perhaps other staff members. All of that is laid out, and it's different with every single nonprofit I've ever been associated with. But that can be edited as time goes on, as you get different board members and different expertise. But all of that's usually laid out. I will tell you, though, besides what's in the bylaws, I have never found it easy for board members to stay consistent with the bylaws in terms of getting non-participating board members off.
Okay.
In other words, once they get on there, and a lot of people will want to get on a board for a resume builder or for some type of social status. And I had a guy do it to me one time because, and then found out as soon as we brought him on, I thought he was really engaged, found out he was just running for city council. As soon as the city council, he did not get it, he ghosted us.
Oh.
And to the point to where you're like, well, wait a minute, are you on board? Are you not? Are you not talking to us? So there's a dismissal off of that. The problem is the reality is people don't want to do hard things. So it's very difficult to get a board chair to be confrontational with other board members and say, we're asking you to step off the board or removing you from the board because of your non-participating results or whatever. And it's just like it is to get leaders to sit down and be able to have tough discussions with employees. So it's just confrontation is necessary. It needs to be done the right way. But it's necessary both as a leader of an organization, but also as board members to the leader of the organization, but as well as other board members, and just bring in accountability. It's always to me been very discouraging when you have people who are invested in an organization and they're putting in their time and they're putting in their dollars and they're really there to support you. And here's somebody over here who's not doing any of those things yet. They're both still considered board members. I think, again, you come out better with saying, I'd rather have five board members that were heavily invested than I would 15 board members and 10 of them you're constantly chasing and really just don't bring any value to, and so, to what you're doing.
And so traditionally, this sounds like a kind of a mess. I can see where this – and again, if you're doing a non-for-profit and you've got a passion behind what you're doing, you hope you all get along, but – what happens when, so if you have a board member that, and obviously people have to start talking, right? You get people that say you got five people, board members, and two or three of them become good friends, right? They're there for every meeting, and maybe one guy's there as often as he possibly can be, and they don't think he's no longer good enough to be on the board. Most bylaws say that they have a vote. Is it an intervention where they bring the guy in and say, we've all been discussing you and we decided we no longer want you on our board? Is that how it flies?
Yes. It's something like this, that if a board member, so like for instance, our board meets every other month. Now I meet every month with the executive committee, and the executive committee are the board officers and the ex officios. But every other month, the full board meets. Well, if you miss two consecutive board meetings, and of course, that's with you not contacting saying, oh, I can't make it. I'm going to be out of town. But just if you just ghost us, then in theory, the board chair or the involvement, whatever person designated for that, could reach out and say, hey, just checking on, is everything okay? But if they didn't respond or they didn't act like they were up, technically it's written in the bylaws that if you miss two consecutive board meetings, you could be voted off. So if the board chair was saying, hey, I talked to this person, they haven't been to four straight board meetings. I emailed them. They don't really have a good reason. I want to ask that this person be removed. Then you take a vote. And as long as you have a quorum available, which will also be what it takes to have a quorum is, will also be in your bylaws, but yeah, then they voted, and then you just send them a letter and say you've been officially removed from our board, and it's as simple as that. Again, though, it takes somebody making a stand, and most people just don't want that additional conflict in their life, so they just like, yeah, I hate they're not participating, but maybe we can find something to get them involved in. And it was just a bad board choice from the very beginning. I favor doing a board orientation before they ever are asked on the board and putting forth very clear expectations of what's going to be expected. If there's a monetary requirement, what that monetary requirement is, there a requirement, yes or no? If there's a certain amount, what is that? What are your expectations in terms of board attendance, committee work? You lay it all out there up front. And you say, if you make that commitment, we hold our board members accountable to that, so that if they're like, no, that's not my thing, then you just weed them out at the front. because if not, you end up taking on a lot of problems that you end up chasing. And you as the CEO is the one that does a lot of the chasing.
Yeah.
Because other board members are going about, they're voluntary board members, so they're doing their own businesses, and I get that. So you're left a lot of times to try to contact these people, and it's stressful. It's impactful in your organization, takes up your time, but just having a board is a requirement, and more boards are run poorly than they are run well.
Can you just open up the back of that bus and just push the board member out? I'm thinking about this bus with
full. I'll tell you about 90% of my friends who are CEOs. It takes you about 2 seconds to come up with a name if we said, who's that board member? They can just spin it off the top of their head.
And I mean, I get the social status part, because you see a lot of wealthy people who are on boards. And in a lot of cases, they probably don't go to a lot of board meetings, but it's because they've got deep pockets and they need their money. And I get that. That certainly makes sense. But if you're getting on a board for social status and you don't have deep pockets, you better plan on working a lot.
That's right. I mean, you can still have value. I mean, we have a good example would be, we have an attorney who's an HR attorney on our board. Well, we redid our personnel handbook. And we changed a lot of policies in that. And we said, hey, look, before we go final on this, we need an attorney to review this. Now, we could pay somebody to review it, or that allows them to use their expertise to help the organization. And so those kind of things are natural fits that you want to find. And when you have board members that do that, you're like, hey, that board member's bringing value. It's not about how much they're donating or what they're doing in terms of who they're introducing us to, but they're using a special skill set, and it's gaining us dollars, because it's not money that we're bringing in, but it's money that we don't now have to put out for those kind of same services.
Great show, Michael. Good stuff. We'll do it again next week. Check out info@tonycurryradio.net for more email questions. About once or twice a month, we just do all emails, and we'll get to your emails. And, of course, so you can go to mafb.org for more information about the Montgomery Area Food Bank. They do wonderful work covering 35 counties through Feeding America right here in the wonderful state of Alabama. Michael, thank you so much. We'll catch up next week.
Loved it as always, brother.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.